All right, good morning, everybody. This is Bible 231, and it is September 17th. I'd want to double-check this recorder, make sure it is working. Indeed, it is. Get some of those lights back down again. All right, so we got the schedule here on the right-hand slide, and today's the 17th. We're going to finish up bones and skeletal tissue. We started that one last time. That's chapter 6. That will be on the exam. And that exam is scheduled for Wednesday. Okay, so that is scheduled for Wednesday. And I'll probably start passing the tests out maybe even before 11 o'clock. So try to get here early. And when you walk in the room, consider the test will be live, and I'll get a test to you as soon as I can. All right, so if you need to study, don't come into the room and study. Just stay out in the hall and study. But come on in to take the test. Okay, and that's some people have been asking about where do you find the study guide for chapter 6, and that's under the button for exam 2. Okay, so it's in there, so you guys are good. Well, do we have any questions on bones and skeletal tissue so far? No, we're all pretty good with that. All right, let's continue on some details. And so I'll put the schedule away. Notice one thing, that there's not a lab practicum this week, but next week, starting on Monday, there are lab practicums, and that's after the test. Okay. All right, so we talked about components of the skeletal system, namely cartilage, bone, and ligaments. Don't forget ligaments. What the heck is a ligament? What kind of tissue is a ligament? It's a bone-to-bone connection, but what kind of bone-to-bone connection? Yeah, it's dense, regular connective tissue. It's kind of like a tendon, except a tendon is a muscle-to-bone connection. And dense regular connective tissue, that's a bone-to-bone connection, is a ligament. All right, the functions we talked about last time, support, means it can hold our body up when we stand up. Protection, it's armor plating for our skull, vertebral column, and our heart and lungs due to the rib cage. There are muscles that are attached to bones, in particular skeletal muscles that move your skeleton around. They're under your voluntary control. Right, and it's an important storage place for calcium ions and inorganic phosphate. And even fat can be stored in the cavities inside bones, and that's what we call the medullary cavity. If it's yellow bone marrow, then it stores fat. If it's red bone marrow, then that part of a bone is used for making red blood cells. And so bone is a hemopoietic tissue. It's a kind of tissue that can rejuvenate your blood, right? Can make more red blood cells. Because remember, how many red blood cells do you lose every second? Millions, right? Between 1 and 2 million. And you have to replace those every second. All right, so that takes us to cartilage. I guess maybe that's why I have it highlighted right here. And this is a kind of a nice review because we've been spending a lot of time on tissues. And cartilage is, I tell you what, before you answer that, how many major kinds of tissues are there in your body? There are four, right? And what are they? Epithelium, connective, muscle, and nervous tissue, right? Okay, and cartilage belongs to which of those four general classes? That's a connective tissue, it's a CT. All right, and there are three kinds of cartilage depending on what kind of fibers we find in that extracellular space. And as a matter of fact, what do we call an extracellular space in a connective tissue? It's a matrix, right? So here is a really good micrograph of hyaline cartilage. It's kind of glass-like. It's just a little translucent, but I don't see any fibers in hyaline cartilage CT. I see little bubbles that we call lacuna, and inside that lacuna is a cell that secretes stuff into the matrix right here. And what's the name of that cell in a cartilaginous tissue? It's a chondrocyte, right? Chondro just means cartilage. All right, so this would be a really good example of hyaline cartilage, connective tissue. I don't see any fibers. This next one here, I do see lacuna once again with a chondrocyte, but now in the ground substance, I do see some highly branched fibers, a network of fibers. So this would be a really good example of elastic cartilage CT. And then the third one that we have, okay, we should see even thicker fibers. All right, I see lacunae with chondrocytes, and this is going to be a good example of fibrocartilage. And fibrocartilage is important because it's strong, not quite as strong as bone, but stronger than elastic and hyaline cartilage. It resists compression and it resists tension. Okay, what does compression mean? Squeezing. Okay, and tension means pulling apart. Okay, so you should become familiar with those terms because bone is real important for that as well as torsion. All right, so compression means it can resist squeezing, tension means it can resist stretching, and torsion means that it can resist twisting, the twisting motion. Okay. Fibrocartilage probably is not so good for resisting torsion, but it's good for compression and tension as well. Okay, some places where you have fibrocartilage, the intervertebral discs, meniscus of the knee, all these places have a lot of weight spanning those particular joints. All right, let's look at some types of bones. We like to classify bones by their shape. Here we see a skeleton, and one type of bone is a long bone. So in two dimensions, the bone is kind of short, like from left to right and from anterior to posterior, but one dimension is very large, like from superior to inferior. If that's the case, then we call that a long bone. Humerus is a good example. Femur is a good example. Even the bones that make up your digits, and a digit is a finger, okay, and in your index finger, you actually have three bones. You can see two knuckles, and you have a bone between each of those knuckles. There are three bones. And each of these bones, even though they're short, they are still long bones because they are short in two dimensions and relatively long in the third dimension. So these are still what we consider long bones, as well as the bones of the digits of your lower appendage as well. These are what we call phalanges. Right, so bones that make up your fingers are phalanges, and they are considered long bones as well. A short bone, okay, one that we have in our wrist, right, or our ankle, like the talus right here is a short bone, or bones of the wrist, these are short, they're not long. There's no dimension, right, left, superior, inferior, anterior, posterior, that's longer than any other of the dimensions. Okay, then there can be irregular shaped bones. So here is a vertebrae from the vertebral column, and it's got all kinds of points and processes and some thick areas and thin areas and a big hole in it. We're going to call this an irregular bone. A good example of irregular bone is a vertebrae. And then a flat bone is going to be your sternum, your breastbone right here. So it has two dimensions that are relatively large, like from superior to inferior, right to left, but in an anterior-posterior dimension, it's very thin. So if it's thin in one dimension, we would like to call that a flat bone. There's one other bone that's not on this slide right here, but I see it. Right? It's not listed on this slide, but I see it right here. This is the patella, and it makes your kneecap. And the patella is embedded within a dense regular connective tissue that connects big powerful muscles in your anterior thigh to this bone down here, which is the tibia. Right? There's a ligament and a tendon. And anytime you have a bone inserted into a tendon, we call that a sesamoid bone. Right? So a sesamoid bone, a good example would be a patella. And we have a couple of locations that have a sesamoid bone, the knee is one, but they can also develop pathologically in some joints if somebody is not using that joint properly with the right kind of angle or if there's repetitive motion injury in a joint. Sesamoid bones can develop, and that would be an inflammation that would cause that joint to hurt. All right, but the patella is an absolutely normal and necessary bone to have for normal mobility. All right, so know some examples of these different kinds of bones. And let's consider now just a long bone, and we're going to dissect a long bone to know how bones are kind of put together histologically and on the inside. Okay, so let's look at a model of bone and just consider a long bone like the humerus or the femur. So here is the humerus that we have in our arm, and we can see it cut open, and here it's not cut open down over here. So a long bone has two ends, one on the top, one on the bottom. The top one is the proximal end of this bone, is where it attaches to some part of your axial skeleton, and the distal part is farther away from some center location on your body. All right, so the distal epiphysis helps make up the elbow joint. The proximal epiphysis helps make up the shoulder joint. So the epiphyses are the ends of a bone. And then a long bone has a large part right smack in the middle. Sometimes we call that the shaft. Other times we call that the diaphysis. All right, so the epiphyses are the tips. The diaphysis is the middle part or the shaft. All right, so those are three parts. In between an epiphysis and a diaphysis, I see an area right here that's filled with solid bone. We call that the epiphyseal line. This is a growth plate. This is how this bone will grow in length, both in the proximal epiphysis as well as in the distal epiphysis. And during development, until you reach puberty, this epiphyseal line or epiphyseal plate is made out of cartilage, hyaline cartilage in particular. All right, so what's a stronger tissue, do you think? Would it be bone that I see in the diaphysis right here, or this hyaline cartilage in the epiphyseal plate? What tissue do you think is stronger, bone or cartilage? Yeah, bone is probably stronger, right? Okay, so that if when an individual is growing, if they put a lot of axial compression on this bone, like if they press from top to bottom, okay, and one of my favorite activities, maybe I'd get on a swing and I'd start swinging back and forth and getting higher and higher and then higher, and then the highest point, what would we all just love to do? Jump off. And you could go flying through the air, a great feeling, but what's the end result? You got to land, and landing is not always fun because it really crunches your bones, okay? And in particular, these epiphyseal plates right here, there's a lot of axial compression, and they can become damaged as a result of that. All right, and when they become damaged, then that growth center stops, and then what happens to the growth of that bone? Then it stops growing in length as a result. And if you hurt one leg and not the other, then you have one leg that's a normal length, and the other leg is going to be shorter as a result, whenever you damage this epiphyseal plate. So compression can damage the epiphyseal plate, but there's another motion too that a lot of athletes, as their youngsters, are told, and those are for little league pitchers that throw baseballs, and that is a twisting motion. A twisting motion on the humerus can be very damaging to this epiphyseal plate. So when a little league baseball player is taught to pitch, they said you can throw a fastball. A fastball is thrown just straight as hard as you can, but they can't throw any fancy balls like curveballs and screwballs that require a lot of spin on the ball, which requires a lot of twisting on the various long bones of that young athlete's arm, which then can damage these epiphyseal plates, and that would be a real shame, because what arm would be damaged? Their weak arm or their dominant strong arm? Yeah, their dominant strong arm would be damaged as a result of that. So please be aware of how important this epiphyseal plate is. If we cut the bone open, it just looks like a line, but remember, it's really a dome in this area. It's really a plate, okay, filled with hyaline cartilage. And then when you reach puberty, this epiphyseal plate ossifies. It turns from cartilage to, when something ossifies, it turns into bone, right? And then it can't be damaged quite so easily compared to when it was hyaline cartilage. All right, so, and when it turns into bone, then the bone stops growing in length as a result. So when do most people stop growing in height? When they reach puberty, because that's when this epiphyseal plate turns from cartilage to solid bone. All right, and just think in your family, it doesn't work for all families across the board, but at least within a family, who's taller, the men or the women, typically? The men are typically a little bit taller because women reach puberty before men do, right? So since women reach puberty at an earlier age, their epiphyseal plates ossify and they stop growing at that point in life, right, where their brothers continue to grow for another year or 2 years, something like that. So they're typically a little bit taller. Okay, so make sure you know that epiphyseal line right there. Surrounding every bone, whether it's a long bone, irregular, flat bone, or whatever, is a membrane. And that membrane around a bone is a periosteum. Peri means surrounding, and anytime you hear that word osteo or osteum, you should think of bone, right? So it's a membrane that surrounds the bone. And I can see the periosteum here. A little bit of the periosteum is reflected away from the diaphysis so that you can see it. And then if you look over here, oh, if you zoom into that region, oh, this is real nice, okay? I can see the periosteum and their connective tissue fibers that anchor it to the superficial surface of the bone. These are what we call perforating fibers or Sharpie's fibers. So the so this membrane doesn't move around. And then there's a cavity inside the bone that we call the medullary cavity. So here's a medullary cavity. Let's go back to the whole picture of a bone. So deep inside the bone, there's a cavity. And there's a membrane that lines every internal surface of the bone. That's not the periosteum. That's what we call the endosteum. Okay, so just think there's a little layer right here that's called the endosteum. Here's the periosteum. They contain a little bit different kinds of cells, so we're going to talk about. All right, and this kind of medullary cavity is filled with yellow bone marrow, which is just adipose connective tissue. It's a storage form of energy for this particular bone. Okay, so you've got two other areas on a bone. The superficial part of a bone, you can see, is made up of solid bone. But the deeper parts of the bone are made up with what we call spongy bone. It looks like a sponge. That's not solid bone. And these kinds of bones have, or this two different kinds of bone has different names. Since this solid bone right here is on the outside of the bone, it's not deep inside, we call it cortical bone. The cortex of any organ is the superficial part of an organ. While this spongy bone right here sometimes is called medullary bone. And the medulla of any organ is the deep part. All right, so the cortex of an organ is on the outside, the medulla of an organ is on the inside. So here is medullary bone, it's spongy. Okay, cortical bone or superficial bone is what we call compact bone. It's solid bone. So cortical and compact bone are really the same thing. Sometimes spongy bone is called trabecular bone. I think I have that on the slides right here. Yeah, trabecular bone. And it's also called cancellous bone because all these little bony plates right here form trabeculi. So this makes bones a little bit lighter. Okay, but it's still strong. And then there's marrow in all these different spaces right here, which can store fat or can make red blood cells depending on what kind of marrow is in this particular bone. And this right here we call the medullary cavity because where is it located? It's deep. It's deep inside the bone, right? So because the deep part of a bone is called the medulla. All right, so you got the two epiphyses, you got the diaphysis, compact bone, spongy bone, epiphyseal lines, medullary cavity. Okay, I see nice trabecular bone. And notice, when we were looking at histology, we saw these tree rings before, right? So those tree rings, or these different lamellae, are a result, or found only in compact bone. We don't see these structures in trabecular bone, right? So do you see all these little circular structures here? Those circular structures are what we call an osteon. So an osteon is the structural and functional unit of compact bone. How bone is nice and strong. Let me go to another picture right here. Okay, we talked about that one. Compact bone. Okay, the periosteum, the endosteum on the inside of every bone. There are perforating canals that go from left to right in a transverse fashion through the bone. So bone is a living tissue. It requires nutrients and an oxygen supply and needs to get rid of waste products. So there are living cells in lacunae, which are little bubbles within the matrix of the bone. And each center of an osteon contains a blood vessel as well. Okay, not a perforating blood vessel, but just a blood vessel that moves along the long axis of the bone. Okay, so here we see a flat bone. A flat bone has cortical bone on the outside, which is compact, and spongy bone, which is more deep. And you can see the trabeculi, and the spongy bone in a flat bone is called diploe. But it's just a medullary type of bone. Okay, here's a different representation of a long bone. It's kind of been cut in half and then a nice transverse section right here. And you can see that the arrangement of these different layers that we call lamellae means that a long bone is made up of tubes inside tubes inside tubes, which are what? Next to tubes inside tubes inside tubes, which are next to more tubes inside tubes. And then surrounding all these tubes are more tubes. Right? So bone has a very tubular structure, which means that it's very difficult to compress from one epiphysis to the other. You can snap it in the middle fairly easily, but if you were to compress it from end to end, it's just not going to compress because of the tubular structure of this thing right here that we call an osteon. Okay, so the ring plates that are very superficial are called circumferential lamellae. So all of these are circumferential lamellae. And these lamellae right here are what we call concentric. Concentric versus circumferential. Because there are what? Tubes inside tubes. That's what concentric means. It means tube inside a tube inside a tube. Okay. Now we see a little space between the tubes. Okay, that I can see right here. So let me zoom in. Here are the perforating or Volkmann's canals. And then here is the central canal of an osteon that contains nerves and blood vessels as well. So when you fracture a bone, what is one of the dangerous things when a bone is fractured? Yeah, hemorrhage, right? Because these blood vessels break. And certainly one should be concerned about that. But that's a benefit to the bone because since it has good nutrient supply after the bone is broken, when it starts to heal, bones can heal relatively rapidly as a result. All right, let me show you next slide. So we zoomed into a little part of an osteon. This osteon should be a nice circular structure. Here's the outer lamella, then the next deeper, and then the next deeper, then the next deeper. Then here is the central canal with an artery and a vein and a nerve. And here I see a cell in a lacuna. And the name of that cell is not a chondrocyte, because where would you find chondrocytes? In cartilage. That this is an osteocyte. An osteocyte is a kind of bone cell that inhabits a mature bone matrix. So here's an osteocyte. I can see the nucleus right there. All right, and nutrients have to be able to diffuse from this blood that's in the central canal to all of these living cells. It can't get through solid bone, so there have to be little passageways, and I see them right here. These are called canaliculi. Ah, here it is, canaliculi. All right, so these are passageways for oxygen to move around and nutrients and for CO2, which is a waste product, to leave these cells. So don't forget, bone is a living tissue. And these cells will rebuild your bones every 5 years. So every 5 years you have a completely new skeleton. All right, so if you're active and you use your skeleton when you exercise, guess how these bones are rebuilt? Kind of thin and fragile or big and strong? Just like a muscle. You exercise that muscle, it gets big and strong. If you exercise your skeleton, it gets big and strong too as a result of that. But if you don't exercise that skeleton, then the bones are going to get weak and fragile, and that sets you up for a pathological condition where people's bones get very brittle as they get old. And a lot of people have problems with this because their vertebrae start to compress or their hips fracture, and that's called osteoporosis, right? So that could be a very dangerous disease. And how can you protect yourself from osteoporosis? Yeah, we just sort of mentioned it. Exercise when you're young. But you also have to have good calcium in your diet, because that's what this matrix is made out of. And then you need vitamin D so that you can absorb that calcium from your diet. All right? Proper diet won't do it by itself, but you need to exercise those bones so they can respond by getting bigger and stronger so that an individual can afford to lose more bone before it becomes brittle. It protects you later on in life. Okay. So I see the lacunae. Here's a lamellae right here. This is a pretty important exam figure, but I think the exam figure that I like is really this one right here. Let's work with this one for just a second. The membrane on the outside of the bone is the periosteum. Periosteum, I can see those Sharpie's fibers. I can see the arteries in the central canal. I can see arteries in the perforating canal. Sometimes it's called a Volkmann's canal, the transverse arteries. The ones in the central canal, those are just the central arteries. This is an osteon. That's the structural and functional unit. This little bracket right here shows you an osteon, and they all line up next to each other in compact bone or cortical bone. These lamellae right here are the concentric lamellae, and these right here are the circumferential lamellae, right? The ones that go all the way around the bone, circumferential. All right, so compact bone made up of osteons is what we find in cortical bone, but in medullary bone, it is what we call spongy bone, okay? Made up of all these different trabecular plates. And then here's a lacunae with an osteocyte, and these little canals that connect the lacunae are called canaliculi, canaliculi. All right, so this is a really nice diagram to look at. It's really clear. It's clearer than the other one that's in your current textbook. Study guide. Okay, that should be in the study guide. If we have time, I'll go look in the study guide, make sure it's there. But it's not labeled in the study guide. Okay, so you can use the figure that's in your textbook. It's about 6.6. It would be it takes the place of this one right here. This is basically the same thing, it's just a little bit more artistic rendition of compact bone and spongy bone. It's just harder for me to see for whatever reason. Okay, it still have the osteons, it's got the circumferential lamellae, the concentric lamellae, the central canal, or Haversian canal, Volkmann's canals, perforating canals, the periosteum with Sharpie's fibers. Okay, so it's just a little bit different representation. Okay, let's consider the osteon for a little bit. And we saw that it's just tubes inside tubes. And here we have dissected away the whole bone except for an osteon, and we've kind of reflected the different lamellae apart from each other. All right, so here we don't see any cells, but we see the matrix. And within the matrix, not only do we have calcium, but we also have collagen fibers. Right, and what the heck is a collagen fiber? What's it important for? What does it resist? Tension. It's just, you can't really pull a collagen fiber because it's like a steel cable. All right, so that resists tension in a bone, but because the different lamellae have collagen oriented in different directions, like 90 degrees to each other right here, you could consider these as belts in a tire, or maybe different layers in plywood, which gives plywood a lot of strength, or the belts within your tire give your tire a lot of strength. So these different layers of collagen oriented in different direction not only resist tension, but it resists twisting of bones as well. And that's what we call, the twisting force is what we call torsion. Okay, and that's due to these collagen fibers between the lamellae in compact bone. That's a pretty important part of bone. Okay. So let's look at chemical composition of bones. Okay, there are organic components that make up bone and inorganic components. The organic components contain an element called carbon, and there also has to be some other things like a hydrogen bound to it, but these are organic compounds. Most of these things your body can't produce or build, right? And organic compounds make cells because these different compounds come together to make an organelle. Organelles come together to make a cell, right? Okay, let's look at some cells. An osteoprogenitor cell. This is a bone stem cell. We find these in the periosteum and the endosteum. Where's the periosteum located? On the outside, and the endosteum is on the inside. All right, so these are cells that can actually form new bone cells. Right, and there are stem cells. Ooh, let me see. Can I go back? All right, so here's the periosteum. So there are stem cells right here. And that explains part of the reason why bones keep growing your whole life, and why they can replace and heal themselves pretty easily because of stem cells in the periosteum. Okay, and if you think of cells in bone, there are three major kinds. We said an osteocyte maintains mature bone. That's what we see in these lamellae right here. All right, but because bone is being built all the time, it's built by a different kind of cell. It's called an osteoblast, an osteobuilder, you could think of. Right, and anytime you hear that term osteo, you're going to just automatically think bone. All right, so an osteoblast builds bone. An osteoclast, on the other hand, breaks bone down. All right, so there's always going to be some activity, some balance between an osteoblast that builds bone and osteoclasts that break it down. And what happens if this balance is lost and the osteoclasts work harder and faster than the osteoblasts? What happens to your bones? They start to go away. They start to dissolve away as a result of that. And that's the essential process that happens during osteoporosis, where these osteoclasts get a little bit more active and people start to lose bone as they age because the osteoblast activity can't keep up. Right? And that might be due to some of those building blocks that are missing. Okay, collagen is another organic part of bone. Right? It's basically a modified protein, and it's made by these different cells, and the collagen is what we find in between the lamellae. All right, and the collagen resists tension and torsion. Tension and torsion are resisted by the organic part that we find in bone. Another part of bone are the inorganic parts. These organic things your body can't really make. You have to have these things in your diet. They are the mineral salts called hydroxyapatites. And the basis for hydroxyapatites is part calcium ion, okay, but also part inorganic phosphate. And inorganic phosphate is PO4. It's got a phosphate with four oxygens on it. Sometimes we just abbreviate it capital P with a little sub-I, standing for this functional group right here. And those osteoblasts know how to combine calcium and inorganic phosphate to make calcium phosphate, and then combine calcium phosphates in a certain way to make hydroxyapatite. And hydroxyapatite is the really strong stuff that acts as cement, and it resists compression, right? So bones don't compress. So you should know these three different terms right here: tension, torsion, and compression, and what parts of a bone resist these different things, these different stresses, right? Inorganic compounds like hydroxyapatite resist compression. Stretching and twisting is resisted by collagen, and collagen is an organic compound, all right, that's made by cells. All right, so if you put all these compounds together, that provides a nice hard bone that resists crushing, compression, and if there's collagen in there, it resists stretching and torsion as well. And some bones are missing components of these different pieces right here, so some bones are brittle because they can't resist compression because there's not enough calcium. Or they're very fragile when they start to twist because they're lacking sufficient collagen in them. So they're all different kinds of pathological processes that could happen to a bone. And it's the mixture of these organic and inorganic compounds together that makes bone durable and strong without becoming brittle. If you had hydroxyapatite, it would be very brittle. It could resist compression, but as soon as a bone began to stretch or to twist, it would just fracture. And as a matter of fact, concrete works the same way. Concrete is great for holding something up, but it can't be stretched. If it's stretched, it crumbles. Or if it twists, it crumbles, like in earthquakes. But if just holding up a building, it likes to hold buildings up, as long as it doesn't stretch or twist. All right, so we looked at some of these things already. The osteon, right here, that's the structural and functional unit of compact bone, not spongy bone, but we see in compact bone. What's another name for compact bone? It's bilocation.
Cortical bone,
yeah, because it's superficial, right? Medullary bone is spongy bone. Okay, we got the concentric lamellae right here, tubes with inside tubes. And then we have the circumferential lamellae on the outside, the most cortical surface. The central canal with blood vessels and nerve, Sometimes we call that the Haversian canal, because sometimes the osteon is called a Haversian system. Haversian, probably after somebody's name. All right, and then I can see lacunae with osteocytes, the connection, the little waterways between the lacunae are canaliculi. All right, and then what is the structural and functional unit of compact bone called? Osteon, that's right. So I want to use that term a lot, and I think we've visited that term already. What's the structural and functional unit of life called? The cell, that's right. All right, so here you see an osteon. It's got a bunch of pieces that are kind of complicated, but once you learn all those little pieces, right, and how they're put together, then you really know how this whole bone functions just by looking at this one little piece that we call an osteon. The same thing about life. If you understand how a cell functions and all the organelles inside of a cell, then pretty much you know everything on how life is built and should proceed. Okay. Let's talk about bone formation and bone growth. There are two kinds of bone growth. One is called intramembranous ossification. And what's ossification once again? It's growing of a bone. Right, there's some turning something into bone. In this particular case, a membrane is going to turn into a bone. So a flat membrane. The second kind is endochondrial ossification. In this example right here, what can you tell me about chondro or chondro? Cartilage. In this particular case, what's going to turn into bone is going to be a model or a precursor of cartilage. So there's going to be a model of your humerus made out of hyaline cartilage, and then that hyaline cartilage slowly turns into bone. It becomes ossified. So these are the two main ways, intramembranous versus endochondrial. And you know what hyaline cartilage looks like because we looked at that already. Okay, so most bones of the skull, so these are flat bones. Bones of the skull are flat bones. Are made by intramembranous ossification. All right, the only other example of that would be the clavicle, which is your collarbone right here. That's not a flat bone, but it's also made from intramembranous ossification. So osteoblasts move into the membrane, and they start to lay down bone matrix, the hydroxyapatite and the collagen fibers. And then the osteoblasts they turn into osteocytes after they're completely surrounded by bone in the bone matrix. Ooh, let me see if I have a picture of this. I hope I do. Probably good enough. All right, so I see a little fetus right here. So we see frontal bone, parietal bone, occipital bone. These are some of the bones that you're going to learn this week in lab. All right, so here is one bone. Here's another bone, frontal versus parietal bone. And then here's a joint between the bones. Okay, and this is a nice cartilaginous joint as you're a fetus and even right at birth. And even after birth, there's going to be an area right here that is made up of membrane. And an area over here that's going to be a membrane. It's not going to be ossified, and another membrane here and another membrane back over here. And these things are what we call fontanelles or soft spots in the baby's brain and for sure the fetus's brain. They're important because during parturition, this skull has to fit through a birth canal, right? So it's got to deform. It's got to squish coming out the cervical canal and vagina. So they allow some movement of the skull, makes parturition a lot easier. But also, the newborn baby's brain grows very, very rapidly, much faster than bone can grow. So there has to be spaces between these bony plates right here so that the individual's brain can grow very rapidly during the first couple of years of life. So the armor plating is incomplete around the cranium. That incomplete armor plating where we have membranes right here, we call fontanelles or soft spots. And fontanelles or soft spots can last. This surprised me when I first learned it, can last for up to 2 years, right? So not just a neonate, not just a newborn baby, but for 2 years. So they're very susceptible to puncture wounds, but that's not the only thing. They're susceptible not just to compression, but to stretching and also to twisting, right? Just like any other kind of bone. So that's why you always got to protect those neonates' heads from any kind of trauma, any kind of twisting. Like, you can't just shake a kid like that because that can hurt a fontanelle. Right? So any kind of twisting, any kind of compression, any kind of tension can damage the brain because of these soft spots or fontanelles in a newborn's brain. And they can last for up to 2 years. You know, there's a breed of dog that has fontanelles their whole life. There's a breed of dogs that never has a completely formed cranium. And I kind of like these dogs. I was thinking of getting some to keep with my other dogs, but my other dogs are Dobermans, which are kind of big and rough dogs, and the other dogs are kind of small. They're rough, too. They just don't really appreciate how small they are. And then I thought, well, gee whiz, you know, if the big dog started playing with that little dog that had fontanelles, that could be really bad for the little dog, like the tooth could go, like, right into their brain. And does anybody know what kind of dog that is that has fontanelles their whole life? Those are the Chihuahuas. Have fontanelles. And I have no idea why they have fontanelles their whole life, or a hole in their head. Okay, pretty cute, but probably should be careful. Don't let them play with too many Rottweilers or Dobermans. All right, so those are bones that develop by intramembranous ossification, bones of the skull, and also the clavicle right here is intramembranous ossification. All the other bones develop by a process we call endochondrial ossification. And endochondrial ossification means that a bone is actually made out of cartilage first before it becomes ossified and not a membrane. All right, so what does cartilage look like? Cartilage looks like, we showed you a picture of that already. What happened to it? All right, so here's hyaline cartilage. All right, so bone is made out of this stuff right here, so there are chondrocytes within lacunae, and then this slowly turns into bone, and when it does, then that cell becomes an osteocyte. Right, so it starts off as a chondrocyte. So how does this process work? Let's look at this picture right here. All right, so here is an example of a long bone. And here we can see the hyaline cartilage, right? And early in development, that's all that we're going to have right here is just hyaline cartilage in the shape of the bone to be, right? And then, right, the parts of a bone that start to ossify first form a ring around, oh, what do we call this part of a long bone? Ah, help me, I forgot. Yeah, diaphysis, right? Right, there's a ring that forms right around the diaphysis of this long bone that we call a bone collar, and it starts to harden. It starts to form a hard ring, right? And we call this a primary ossification center. There's another primary ossification center deep inside the diaphysis right here, so bone starts to form on the inside. Then you have the endosteum lining this cavity, and then you have the periosteum surrounding this. And then this starts to grow and grow. And there are cells then that start to break away bone from the deeper parts of this long bone. Who can tell me the name of a bone cell that is responsible for making this cavity inside this long bone? That's the osteoclast. The osteoclast is going to dissolve this hole in the inside of the bone. And the bone collar is made by osteoblast. Right, so the builder of bone is a blast, and the one that's an excavator or makes these cavities is the clast. All right, then we get a secondary ossification center in the epiphyses here and here. All right, and so this is where the bone starts to ossify in a secondary location, and then these two start to merge together, and then eventually we're going to have that epiphyseal plate, which is hyaline cartilage, which was what this bone was first modeled out of, and that hyaline cartilage is responsible for depositing new bone cells as this bone grows from proximal to distal epiphysis, right? So this bone grows in length at the epiphyseal plates, but a bone grows in diameter when the osteoblasts and the periosteum lay bone down on the superficial surface, and then the medullary cavity is enlarged and maintained by osteoclasts that are in the endosteum. Right, so it's a balance of the osteoblasts in the periosteum working against the breakdown of bone of osteoclast within the endosteum right here. Right, so in order to make this bone nice and healthy, this activity has to be coordinated. And when we're young, it's easy for those cells to do that. But as we get older, it's the osteoclasts that kind of win out, and our bones get a little bit weaker as a result. Okay, and then when you reach puberty, then this epiphyseal plate right here ossifies, and then this bone stops growing in length when that happens. Right, some bones maybe keep growing a little bit, but not very much. Right, it's really not a noticeable effect. Okay. So sometimes when you have one region of the bone that's being built up, like the cortical surface, and the medullary surface, the deep surface right here, is being dissolved away, we call that appositional growth. Right, so bone grows in diameter by appositional growth because it's being broken down and built up at the same time. All right, let's take a look at some of this stuff right here. Okay, I talked about pretty much everything so far on this word slide. Remodeling is an important process. Okay, remember we said that, or I said that every 5 years you get a new skeleton. And that new skeleton then is built upon how you use your body. If you don't use your body, it's built rebuilt in a kind of a weak way. If you use your muscles and pull on all those bones, then your skeleton is rebuilt or remodeled so that bone is very strong. So remodeling is done by first bone being broken down by osteoclasts. And this is very important, for instance, if there's a fracture in a bone. Let's see if I have a picture of a fracture. I'm not sure I have a picture of a fracture. Oh, I guess there's a pretty good picture of a fracture. All right, so first you have breakage of blood vessels and a hemorrhage. And if that forms a blood blister right there, that's what we call a hematoma. All right, so if you ever pinch your skin or something, you could get a blood blister. We would call that a hematoma. All right, the initial stages. All right, the osteoclast will move in, and I see a bunch of bone fragments right here and right here, and these things are sharp fragments. They can lacerate tendons and muscles and nerves and the periosteum. So these sharp fragments have to be removed. What kind of cell can remove these bone fragments right here? The osteoclasts, right? Break down bone fragments and remove them. And when they break down these bone fragments, then that releases calcium and phosphate and amino acids. Amino acid is the building block of collagen, so that when this bone starts to rebuild itself, it has the basic building blocks necessary to do that. Okay, then osteoblasts move in and begin to deposit new bone matrix in these areas right here. But the first thing that happens is that there are fibroblasts that come in and start to lay down a lot of collagen, a network of collagen in this area, welding these bone fragments together so that they stop moving. That's what we call a callus. All right, so a callus is a bunch of collagen fibers, and those collagen fibers are pretty strong, but not as strong as bone. Okay, so there's something that we typically do for fractures to protect a callus. Right, that callus forms just within the first week, okay, and the callus has to be protected because it's going to take about 5 weeks for a bone to get strong again. So what do we do for bones to protect that callus, which is relatively weak compared to the rest of the bone that's around it? Yeah, put it in a cast so it's not disturbed. All right, after that first week, second week, third week, if the callus is disturbed, if that joint or that fracture is broken once again, then the bone probably will never heal properly after that. Right? That's why it's important to cast these fractures. Right? But if a bone is immobilized during the rebuilding process and the callus is not disturbed, then the bone will grow back even stronger than it was before. Right? So more bone matrix will be deposited. It will form a nice scar, which is really, really strong. All right, then the osteoblasts move in and make the nice lamellae right here, and that process of remodeling this fracture takes only about 4 to 6 weeks. And during that time, you just got to protect that bone so that it's not overused or refractured. Okay, so that works in most parts of your body, except for instance, maybe this is your big toe down here. What do you, if you break a toe, what does your orthopedist tell you? Tape it together, but they're going to say, you know, you need 6 weeks of bed rest, because anytime you stand up, you have the chance of damaging that callus. Maybe you're not going to rip it completely apart, but you're going to damage the callus as a result of that. All right, so that's why it takes a long time for toes to heal, because nobody can afford to stay in bed for weeks and weeks on end. So they try to develop a cast, a walking cast or whatever, but still the digital fractures of your toes take a really long time, because every time you stand up, you kind of re-damage that injury. Right? It takes a long time. All right, so this is chapter 6. Let me just think if there's anything else that I want to say. Oh, we're going to go to look at blackboard, huh? Okay. So you got osteocytes, you got osteoblasts, osteoclasts. How many different kinds of lamellae do you have? Circumferential around the outside of the bone, concentric that make the osteons, right, or lamellae. And you have some organic fibers between the lamellae. What do we call those organic fibers between? Those are the collagen fibers. All right, so you should know what those collagen fibers are good for. What good are these collagen fibers right here? For twist, they prevent twisting as well as tension. They resist tension as well as twisting, and it's the inorganic part of the matrix, the hydroxyapatite or the calcium phosphate right here, that resists compression. So you put all those chemicals together in just the right way, bone doesn't compress, it doesn't stretch, and it doesn't twist as a result of that. If you're missing one or the other of these chemicals, then a bone will be susceptible to fracture due to twisting or compression or to tension, depending on what structure it is. Okay. And what do we have right here? Got something that looks like blackboard. Okay, so I don't have study guides as a button, so it must be what, under course documents? Study guides. Let's look for 6, chapter 6. So it's going to be under exam 2. Let's get it with the figures. So I'm going to download it. I'm going to right click and then say save link as someplace. That's a PDF file. Downloads. Where should I put it? Maybe here. That's good. One exam, two. Oh, 231. Okay. It's a little bit of a big file because it's got graphics. It doesn't have videos, but it has some graphics in there. So it's 5 megabytes. If you don't want to take time to download the whole graphics file, you just want the Word file, that's what this other one is. That's only 12 kilobytes, so it's a little bit faster to download, but it doesn't have the exam figures in it. All right, so where did I put this thing? I think here, exam 2 study guide. Okay, so here's chapter 6, page reading, check your understanding. These questions are good, right? Make sure you understand the answer to question number 1 before reading the next section, because some of this information is important for you to know what before you can understand the next section. And then check your understanding point number 2 before you go on to a section on the other side of that one. Exam figure 2, exam figures right here, 6.4 and 6.7. Let's see where those are. Here's 6.4, here's 6.7. So let's label some of these things. So what do we got right here, this bracket? It's the end of a bone. It's the tip of a bone. That's the epiphysis, okay? And this one is up by your shoulder, so this is the proximal epiphysis. This one down here, this bracket here is the distal epiphysis. And then this right here is called the diaphysis. You could call it a shaft, but I probably don't have shaft. It fits on the test. Okay. Then I've got this lead line right here. This is pointing to the medullary cavity. And the medullary cavity is lined by the endosteum. Okay, do I see... Oh, this lead line here is going right to the surface of this bone, but don't forget, there's a membrane right on the surface of the bone. That's the periosteum. And then here we got a compact bone. What's another name for compact bone? Cortical bone, because it's superficial. Right, and then what's the structure here? That's the epiphyseal plate or epiphyseal line. And then what kind of bone is this? Spongy bone. And then covering the tips of bones because it's going to form a joint. That's not bone right there, that's cartilage. What kind of cartilage? It is articular cartilage, or you could say hyaline cartilage. Articular and hyaline cartilage are the same thing. I guess maybe a book might say articular cartilage if it makes up an articulation, which is a joint. So articulation and joint are the same thing. All right, then I see some bony plates over here. I see the periosteum once again. I see trabeculae, and this thing is maybe pointing to a lacunae with an osteocyte inside of it. This whole structure, what do we call this? Oh no, that's a whole bone. Here's the periosteum once again. Okay, what are all of these circles with inside circles with inside circles? Yeah, those are the concentric lamellae. Okay, and you put a bunch of concentric lamellae to form an osteon along with the central canal right here. And I think this is yellow in your book, so this is yellow bone marrow. Oh, and there's a membrane that lines the medullary cavity. What do we call this membrane? That's the endosteum. Okay, periosteum. These fibers that go from the periosteum into the cortical bone. These are Sharpey's fibers. Okay. And this one here. Ah, this is good. What are these things? This right here. That's a Volkmann's or perforating canal. Here's the central canal. And these lamellae are what we call concentric lamellae, right? Because they make up an osteon. What are these lamellae way out over here? Circumferential lamellae. So if you put a bunch of concentric lamellae together, you get this bracket right here, which is the osteon. Here you can see the circumferential lamellae. That's what these lead lines are pointing to. And what is this bracket pointing to? The central canal. Right, or haversian canal. You could call it haversian canal or central canal. What kind of bone is this here?
Compact.
Compact, yeah, or cortical bone. People talk about it the same way. And what kind of bone is over here?
Spongy
bone, medullary bone, cancellous bone, trabecular bone. Okay, the covering. What's the covering on every internal surface of a bone? What's that called?
Endosteum.
Yeah, and there's endosteum even in these perforating canals. All right, then the periosteum, and then these Sharpey's fibers right here. All right, so this picture is not in your book, but you should be able to find the correspondence with the picture that's in your book and this one. All right, this is actually, I think, easier to label than the one that's in your textbook. This is the one in your text? I don't think so. Is it? Oh, okay. The one I like better is not in the study guide. Okay. I don't know what I think about that. Okay, well, this is not on your test. All right, this is going to be after your test. We're going to start talking about bones that make up the skeleton. You sure this is the one? I don't know. Looks different in black and white. Looks a lot clearer in black and white. This is the one that's not in your textbook. Ah, this other one is. Okay. Oh, somebody forgot to tell me. Sign-in sheet. So pass it around while I take some questions. Okay, any questions? Just 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. No 3.
We don't need a Scantron.
Yeah, you need a Scantron. And I didn't bring an example. You need an 884 ES. 884. Oh, yeah, let's go over what you need for the test. Yeah, question.
In the book, it says that bone regeneration in 10 years, and you told us it's going to be in 5 years.
8 to 10?
So if we put down 5, it will be the correct.
Yeah, since I told you that. If you put 8 to 10, I would give you credit for that too, since your book tells you that. Yeah. Yeah. 882? This one right here, let me look. 882E, 882ES. But not an 882 Lovas. There's an 882 Lovas. The Lovas has the bubbles already darkened, and sometimes my Scantron reader gets all messed up. It's not a pencil, it's an ink mark within the bubbles. But I like the 882E or ES because you have a capital A, capital B, capital C, capital D, and E. There's other Scantrons that have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 across. But the answers on the test are what? An A, B, C, D, E, not numbers. So if you buy one with numbers on it, then you have to like know 3 is a C and that kind of stuff. So.
Okay,
882E. For sure not the 882 Lovas. Lovas is no good. I was answering somebody's question, but I forgot what it was. I forgot. Okay, so I'll be here early on Wednesday. Come on in when you're ready to take the test. And, we're going over what you need for the test. You need that 882E or ES. You need a pencil and a good eraser, okay? The erasers that come with mechanical pencils are not even close to being good enough because they smudge. And when you make a smudge, then the Scantron reader doesn't know how to grade your paper, right? And then you'll probably get missing points on your Scantron if that happens. So in your syllabus are some erasers that I recommend. There's a Mars Stettler, and then there's a Kolinar and other ones that are really good. So what you should do, make sure you find your pencil, maybe today or tomorrow, and an eraser on a clean white piece of paper. Make a mark with your pencil and then take your eraser and erase it. And if it smudges that mark, then throw the eraser away and go get a good one. Okay? And I think the bookstore has some of these good ones. So do a dry run at home so that you're not running around crazy on Wednesday trying to find an eraser. Okay. So eventually, in my classes, if you make a smudge on your Scantron and it's marked wrong by the Scantron reader, I don't give students credit for that. That sounds really brutal, but you know what? That's just kind of an educational process. You have to know how to fill a Scantron out properly because one of these days you're going to be taking board exams and they're going to cost you hundreds and hundreds of dollars to take a board exam. And if you leave it all smudged up and you fail the board exam, even though maybe you know all the right answers, then it's going to cost you hundreds of dollars, right? So just practice filling out your Scantrons perfectly so that you don't ever have to take a board exam over again. That's no fun, okay? All right, so the sign-in sheet is going, where's the sign-in sheet at? Okay. If you've signed the sign-in sheet, if there's no questions, then you are free to go. Hi. What class? And I told you to come in and make up a quiz?
No, well, yeah, because I have emailed you, but I couldn't come on Thursday because I haven't been better.
Oh, I forgot completely.
Yeah, and then you told me to come on Wednesday after, but I was like,